for their fine presentations, and the case will be taken under advisement. The next case on this morning's call is number 02-1432, Mid-America Title Company against TransNation Title Insurance. Mr. Freeling.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'm Paul Freeling. I'm here on behalf of the appellant. With me at counsel table was Andrea Okun. The two of us tried the case below. This dispute, of course, involves real estate title insurance company and its exclusive agent in the Chicago area. When the case went to the jury, there were only two counts left in the complaint. Count one alleged that the appellant violated the agency agreement by indirectly issuing title insurance policies in Mid-America's territory through Commonwealth Land Title Insurance. I apologize for my voice. Commencing in 1990. And count two alleged that TransNation violated the agency agreement indirectly by issuing title insurance policies in Mid-America's territory through Lawyers Title Insurance since 1998. There are only two ways that Mid-America claimed that indirect issuance of these policies occurred. One involves referrals where an out-of-state TransNation office had business that pertained to Mid-America's territory and sent that business to someone other than Mid-America. And the second concerns the alter ego doctrine where Mid-America claims that TransNation, Commonwealth Land Title, Lawyers Title and the parent corporation, now Land America, were all one and the same, and the corporate veil should be pierced between those companies. With regard to the referrals, one more thing that Mid-America claims is that they were damaged by these actions, and it is our contention that there was not any proof of the damages that would be allowed in a breach of contract case. I'll get to that later. With regard to the referrals, these referrals supposedly took place over an 11-year period from 1990 through 2000. There was not a single scintilla of evidence that any referral had taken place that produced a policy, a title insurance policy by Commonwealth or Lawyers Title during that period of time. The only evidence was that Mr. Bond Sr., the president of Mid-America, said that he believed that referrals were occurring. This was directly refuted by the witnesses from TransNation who testified that there had been no referrals by out-of-state TransNation offices to Commonwealth or to Lawyers Title that resulted in any policy being issued. So there's not a scintilla of evidence of any improper action with regard to referrals. With regard to the alter ego doctrine, these four companies, TransNation, Lawyers Title, Commonwealth, and Land America, are all separately incorporated. The record is absolutely clear that they all maintained separate bank accounts, that they kept all the corporate formalities. They had separate directors' meetings. They report separately to the states in which they're regulated, including
the state. They do have some officers who are the same, do they?
Absolutely. No question. There are some officers, as so frequently happens when you have a conglomerate or a parent subsidiary situation. There's no question that there were officers. There is no case, Your Honor, particularly under the law that's applicable here, which happens to be Arizona, but there's no law, there's no case that suggests that the mere commonality of some officers is enough to pierce the corporate veil. And God forbid there should be such a doctrine, because it would involve piercing the corporate veil in literally millions of corporations that have subsidiaries, including, as a matter of fact, the Mid-America companies, which also have commonality of officers. That's the separation of corporations is perhaps as fundamental a doctrine in corporate law as there could be. And if mere commonality of officers were enough, that there would be all sorts of havoc in the corporate
world. Does the record contain any evidence as to whether commonality of officers is particularly prevalent in the insurance industry?
There is nothing in the record about that, Your Honor. To be perfectly fair, there's a little bit more than commonality of officers. There's some shared facilities, and there's in 2001 there's some joint advertising. But that's the extent.
I wanted to ask you about the.
Yes, Your Honor.
How do we deal with the magazine ads that describe the them as operating as one company with one management team?
You know, first of all, the magazine ads were after the period that's involved in this case. They were in 2001, and the case concerned 1990 to 2000. But you know, the magazine ad also said very clearly that these companies have separate products and separate services. And that is exactly the case. These are competitors, Your Honor. Just as, for example, Marshall Fields and Target are competitors, even though they're both owned by Dayton Hudson. The evidence was unequivocal. As a matter of fact, Mid-America personnel themselves admitted that TransNation and Commonwealth and Lawyers Title are out in the marketplace beating each other up to try to get business, and that the employees of one are not going to get paid if title insurance is written by one of the affiliated corporations. These are clearly separate corporations. And yes, they did have joint advertising in these two instances very late in the game. That, I mean, remember that this case goes back to 1990. TransNation was not affiliated with Land America until 1998. TransNation became an affiliate of Commonwealth in 1990, and it was only in 1998 that it became affiliated at all with Land America.
What about the website? The website and reference to, I think there was a, if you look up a TransNation agent for Waukegan, you get referred to TransNation in Chicago?
I believe you referred to Lawyers Title or Commonwealth in Chicago. There is no reason to believe that there should have been on the website for Waukegan, Illinois, a reference to Mid-America. There is no TransNation office in Waukegan, Illinois. And so if you're looking for a TransNation office in Waukegan, you're not going to find one. Whether there ought to be a cross-reference to Mid-America, which of course is a separate corporation, totally distinct from TransNation, it seems to me is a moot point. That you don't pierce corporate veils because of the way a website refers you in Waukegan, Illinois. The cases are so clear that in order to pierce corporate veil, you've got to find that the corporations are shams, that they are frauds on creditors, that they're working injustices. And here you have well-capitalized companies, companies that have been in business for many, many years, that have been competing with each other for many, many years, that are regulated all over the country. And if the court were to pierce the veil in this case, as I say, there'd be havoc in the corporate world.
How do we deal with TransNation's Denver office referring a request to Commonwealth rather than Mid-America? How do we deal with things like that?
First of all, that was a mistake. TransNation office in Denver should have referred that matter to Mid-America, and they did not do so. The good news is, if there is any, is that it was a bogus order. It was not an order for a title insurance policy. There never was a title insurance policy issued. I'd like to think, but of course it's pure speculation, that before a title policy ever issued by Lawyers Title, somebody would have realized that there was a mistake made. But there's certainly no damage. As a matter of fact, MidAmerica had a count in its complaint that related to that incident, which the court dismissed because MidAmerica conceded that it was in no way damaged by that incident. Again, I point out that was an incident in late 2000, which MidAmerica tries to parlay back to 1990, and there was no relation between TransNation and Lawyers Title, for example, in 1990. There's no way you can create these referrals. You know, there would have to have been thousands of referrals in order to generate the kind of money that MidAmerica is seeking. And there was not an evidence of a single referral that ever produced a policy.
And how did we deal with the fact that TransNation refused to accept a particular agent when he was proposed by MidAmerica, but later was accepted by Lawyers Title?
This has nothing to do with indirectly issuing policies, but this incident is so easy, and to my way of thinking, to deal with. The original application, the application by Mr. Friedman to become an attorney agent, was rejected by the Illinois Department of Financial Institutions, which is a requirement that it be accepted. It was rejected for at least two reasons. Number one, Mr. Friedman could not be an attorney agent because he wasn't an attorney. He had been disbarred for giving bribes to a judge. And number two, he applied for a license in the name of a corporation that didn't exist. It hadn't been incorporated yet. Later, Mr. Friedman's wife did incorporate a company. If that company applied to Lawyers Title, Mr. Friedman was known to Lawyers Title. He wasn't known to TransNation. And Lawyers Title decided in its wisdom to accept that corporation as an agent, not as an attorney agent. But that wasn't the application that Mr. Friedman had made to TransNation. It was to be an attorney agent. He wasn't an attorney, and in the name of a corporation that didn't exist. And therefore, it seems to me that is clearly dealt with by the evidence. With regard to damages, if I might turn to that quickly, this case involves no evidence whatsoever of the damages that MidAmerica might be entitled to, even assuming that there was a breach of contract. Of course, we contend there was no breach of contract. As this court knows full well, in order to prove damages in a breach of contract case, there has to be a path that leads from the benefits that are received as a result of the breach of contract, or the benefits that are lost as a result of the breach of contract, to the injured party. In other words, MidAmerica would have had to show, in order to get breach of contract damages, that either TransNation benefited in some way from this alleged breach of contract, or that MidAmerica suffered detriment in some way from this breach of contract. And benefit, detriment means, and this court has said this over and over again, it means net revenue. It means gross revenue minus the costs that are incurred in deriving that revenue. MidAmerica asked the jury to do one of two things. Number one, it asked the jury to simply speculate, to do whatever the jury thought was right in the way of punishing TransNation for these supposed wrongs. And clearly, that is inappropriate in a breach of contract case. The second thing that MidAmerica did was to say, in compliance with the contract, compliance with the agency agreement, TransNation received $4.7 million of gross revenue over this 11-year period, and according to MidAmerica, TransNation incurred $1 million of expense relating to claims that were assessed against TransNation, and the net $3.7 million is the measure of damages. It is perfectly clear that this measure of damages has nothing to do with the breach that MidAmerica was alleging. This has nothing to do with the referrals of business that supposedly occurred or with the alter ego argument. This is not what Commonwealth or Lawyers Title is said to have made in the way of net revenues from the breach by reason of the companies being commingled. This was strictly an assertion that in compliance and with the agreement, in performing its duties as it agreed to do, that TransNation had benefited to the tune of $3.7 million. Without arguing for the moment about whether that's a proper computation, that is clearly not the kind of breach of contract damages that a court can award or that a reasonable trier of fact can award. It has nothing to do with benefit from the breach. And therefore, I respectfully submit that the damages part of this case fails, and of course, MidAmerica had an obligation to prove all of the elements of its claim, including damages. Therefore, we hope that the court will reverse the decision against TransNation, affirm the decision in favor of Land America.
Thank you, Mr. Freely. We'll hear now from Mr. Bond.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the court, my name is Ted Bond, Jr., and I have the privilege today of appearing before you on behalf of MidAmerica Title Company. This case is not about competition, although Mr. Freeling would like to structure it that way and say that this is simply MidAmerica complaining about competition from Commonwealth and Lawyers Title. That's not what this case is about. MidAmerica does not object to having competitors. It's always had competitors, and it always will have competitors. What this case is about is a specific contractual provision which provided that certain people, meaning TransNation and the people who worked for TransNation, would not directly, and this is the key word, indirectly issue title insurance policies within an exclusive geographical territory. MidAmerica has had, since 1983, an exclusive territory which essentially compromised all of the Chicagoland area, Cook County and the surrounding counties. What has happened is that the gentlemen who worked for TransNation Title have also gone to work for the competitors. The testimony that was presented at the trial involved every single key management person for TransNation Title during the relevant time period, meaning from 1990 through 2001. David Fowle, Michael Fonder, Gary Opper, J. Scott McCall. These individuals all got up on the stand and said, not from day to day, not only do they work for TransNation and buy in on behalf of MidAmerica and their exclusive agency, but they also work for Commonwealth Land Title, and they also work for Lawyers Title. We have a situation where all of the people responsible for the operations in MidAmerica's territory switch hats on a daily basis. They sit in their office and one day work for TransNation, and the very next moment turn around, put on a different hat, and work for Commonwealth or Lawyers Title. Again, we don't object to having that competition, but for the fact that TransNation had agreed they would not do that in 1983. The argument in this case, although they'd like to boil it down to a legal argument about whether or not we should pierce a corporate veil, simply comes down to giving effect to the plain meaning of the agency agreement. The agency agreement said that TransNation would not indirectly issue title insurance policies in the Chicago area. How else would you go about indirectly issuing title policies other than having your officers and your management team do it through another corporation? That's the ultimate definition of indirect. We are not alleging in this case that TransNation directly issued policies. It's indirect only. And the only way to do it indirectly would be to have your people do it behind some kind of screen, and in this case the screen that was used was other corporate entities.
Forgive me, Mr. Bond, but I'd like to talk to you a bit, if I might, about the profits.
Okay.
Because, well, can you point to any evidence in the record showing the amount of profits MidAmerica lost because of TransNation's breach?
We can't, only because it's a very difficult burden to prove a negative. Meaning,
yeah,
how can we show what business did not come to us had what occurred not occurred? We can't predict.
Right, but we've got to justify this verdict somehow. So how are we going to do it?
This is a breach of contract case, and the damages in breach of contract are benefit of the bargain. The evidence, which is unrebutted in this case, is that TransNation received the benefit of their bargain and MidAmerica did not. The benefit of the bargain that TransNation received is that during the relevant 11-year time period from 1990 through 2001, they received title insurance premiums from MidAmerica of $4.7 million, and they paid out only $1 million in claims, leaving them with a net profit of $3.7 million.
Yeah, but that's really oversimplified. First of all, what about TransNation's expenses? And how are you going to explain why your lost profits can be assumed to equal TransNation's profits? Because that's what we would have to do here.
Well, it's very simple to make the jump that if $3.7 million of our money went to TransNation, that profit went against us and went in their favor. It's very logical.
Every cent of it?
Well, the fact is that at the time of the trial, there was no evidence presented to rebut or dispute that $3.7 million figure. TransNation.
No, but this is your burden. Now we're talking about your burden.
Correct. Now, we've put on a piece of evidence to show that there was a $3.7 million net profit. TransNation, if they wanted, could have put on witnesses to testify that we had certain expenses, we had overhead, we had other things that negate that $3.7 million figure and bring it down to a lower number. The other thing that I would point out here is we asked the jury for the $3.7 million. That's not what they awarded here. They awarded less than half of that. They only awarded $1.5 million. So I don't think that it's unreasonable to assume that the jury thought along the lines that Your Honor is thinking, that, well, maybe $3.7 million is an overly simplified figure, and we can reduce it down to something that's a little bit more logical. I think the case law is very clear that when we're dealing with damages in a breach of contract case, it is very difficult to come up with an exact figure, and that the plaintiff does not have an absolute obligation to come in with a specific and exact dollar amount. All they need to do is show some reasonable basis to justify the damages.
I'm asking you for the reasonable basis.
And again, I would say that I think the reasonable basis here is that the only evidence that was presented to the jury was that TransNation made a $3.7 million profit off of their contract with MidAmerica during the relevant time period. That's the basis right there. And if one party receives the benefit of the bargain and the other does not, the way that you make things level or make it even is to take away the benefit as best you can from the breaching party. And that's all we're asking to do here, is to take away the benefit that TransNation has received because they did not live up to their contractual obligations in this case. The issues that are being raised today in front of this panel are not primarily issues of law. They are issues of fact. We had a trial in front of a jury where there was evidence presented, and the questions which were presented was there indirect issuance of a policy, and did TransNation fail to refer business? All of that evidence was presented, and a determination of fact was made by the jury in favor of MidAmerica. If I could back up a little bit and talk a little bit about the referral issue, which I've neglected to mention. Again, it can be very difficult to prove a negative. How do you prove that TransNation refused to refer business? That can be very difficult because when they don't, it's hard to go back and say, what did they do? We do know that the evidence shows that when an order was placed in Colorado's TransNation office, that they did not refer it to MidAmerica. And Your Honor brought up the issue of the website. The website is not an office locator for direct operations of TransNation. It asks for agents of TransNation. And when you go into the Waukegan section of the website and ask for an agent in Waukegan, which is what MidAmerica is, and Waukegan is their home base, it refers you down to Commonwealth in Chicago. So the evidence that was presented to the jury very clearly showed that TransNation did not engage in a pattern of referring business when it had an opportunity to do so. The evidence, there was also no evidence presented whatsoever that TransNation referred any business. They had a contractual obligation to refer business. Why didn't they present witnesses or testimony to say that, look at all this business that we've referred you over the last 11 years. We've referred you X number of orders and you've made X number of profit off of those referrals. None of that evidence was presented here. So it was very easy for the jury to take the next logical step and infer, here's some evidence to show that referrals weren't taking place. There is no definitive evidence that referrals did take place. We can therefore presume that they didn't. That said, again, this was primarily an issue of fact that was tried at the jury level. As this court well knows, we have to give extreme deference to a jury verdict. We cannot overturn a jury's verdict unless there is absolutely no evidence to support it. And the standard of review in this matter is really not a de novo standard, as the appellants have argued here, but it is simply a standard of viewing the light in the favor, viewing the evidence in a light most favorable to the verdict winner, meaning MidAmerica, and interpreting whether there was evidence to support it. There was evidence that TransNation did not indirectly, there was evidence that TransNation did indirectly issue policies in the territory. There was evidence that they did not refer business, and there was evidence of damages. Every single element that needed to be proved, there was evidence of. The jury found that there was evidence, and they entered a verdict consistent with it. They did not give the plaintiffs everything they were asking for in this case. They came in with a figure that was less than half of what was asked for. I think the jury was more than reasonable in what they did here.
Would you tell me again what the $4.7 million stands for?
That was the net title insurance premium that MidAmerica paid to TransNation from 1990 through 2001, meaning when a title insurance policy is issued, there's a premium that is collected, and a portion of that premium is retained by the agent, and a portion is paid to the underwriter to provide the actual insurance. So during that 11-year period, based on the formula that was contained within the contract, MidAmerica paid $4.7 million.
And there was no evidence, at least I think I understood you to say, of how many referrals TransNation made to MidAmerica.
No evidence submitted whatsoever. And they would have had an opportunity to do so if, in fact, they had been doing that. And we know that there was a chance to make referrals, and that at least in two instances they weren't made. So we're here today before the court asking that the jury's verdict be affirmed in its entirety. I would point out to the court that all of the arguments that are being made here were made on a judgment for notwithstanding the verdict, on a motion
Why
for a retrial.
Why shouldn't the damages have equaled those two if that's all that was proved?
Your Honor, I wouldn't have an objection if we did. And in fact, we argued in our counter appeal that $3.7 million would
be. No. Those two referrals. That'd be about $300, I suppose.
I would suppose it probably would, but the case is not just about failing to refer business. This case is about competing within an exclusive territory when they were not supposed to compete. It's not just about a lack of referrals. That's not even the primary issue in the case. The primary issue in the case is indirect issuance of policies through affiliated companies run by the same people who run TransNation. In conclusion, I would simply state that I think that the jury verdict here was well-reasoned, well-supported.
Have you dropped your argument as to the jury viewing it as punitive?
I don't think we ever did argue that it was punitive. I think it was just, as I mentioned before.
Well, somewhere in here you do.
Well,
if you didn't argue there, you do here.
If I used the word punitive, then I probably misused the word. But
you attempted, it seemed, to justify the verdict as punitive damages.
Well, what I intended,
because what you said was that the jury took enough away, to castigate TransNation for its repeated breaches of contract. That's punitive.
Well, maybe that was the poor choice of words. But what they did was they took away enough to make the parties back on an equal footing, to take away the benefit of the bargain that TransNation had received because they were the breaching party. I think that's maybe a better way to put it. So unless I have any other questions, I think I'll conclude.
Thank you, Mr. Bond.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Freeling, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Mr. Bond just told the court that every key TransNation employee worked for affiliates as well. What he didn't tell you is that there was not a word of testimony to suggest that any of those employees ever referred a customer to some company other than MidAmerica for the issuance of a title policy in MidAmerica's territory. That those individuals categorically denied that they had ever improperly referred a customer.
Do you agree that the evidence doesn't show how many title insurance references were made from TransNation to MidAmerica?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. Mr. Bond Sr. testified that there were referrals made by TransNation to MidAmerica, but he said we didn't get them all. He said there were referrals. He just said we didn't get them all. And I submit that if you're asking a jury to award $1.5 million or 3.7 or whatever, and you're making on a transaction, the evidence at trial was that Mid-America would charge about $575 for a $100,000 policy. There was no evidence with regard to what would be charged for a larger policy. But if each individual transaction involves $500, $600, $700, that's gross revenue. Obviously, net revenue is less than that. If you think about it, there had to be thousands of referrals from TransNation people to Commonwealth and Lawyers Title that didn't go to Mid-America and should have, and there wasn't evidence of a single one. This isn't proving a negative. This is identifying a customer that should have been sent to Mid-America and a policy issued by Commonwealth or Lawyers Title. There was not one of these thousands that there must have been. And again, I repeat, Mr. Bond himself testified that there were referrals, but he didn't think that he was getting them all. Mr. Bond Jr. Argued that the damages are based on benefit of the bargain. I would remind the court, the evidence at trial was that Mid-America kept approximately 90% of the premiums that were collected. That $4.7 million that went to TransNation was about 10% of the premiums that were collected, so that over the course of this period, Mid-America collected approximately $47 million. That's the bargain. That's the bargain that these companies made, that Mid-America would be entitled to 80, 90% of the premiums, and Mid-America received those premiums and kept 80 to 90% and sent to TransNation only 10. So Mid-America got the benefit of the bargain. If what Mr. Bond really means is this is a rescission case, then there are a whole lot of customers out there who are owed millions of dollars in premiums that they paid because they were getting TransNation title insurance through Mid-America. The website, I would like to point out to the court that there was no evidence that any customer was ever misled by that website. Mr. Bond Sr. himself went on the internet to look at the website, but there was no evidence presented by Mid-America that the website was seen by any customer. Lastly, I'd point the court to page 25 of the reply brief regarding punitive damages, where Mid-America wrote, or I'm sorry, the responsive brief. It can easily be assumed that TransNation's $3.7 million profit resulted in a loss of profits to Mid-America. The jury's decision was reasonable. They did not take away all of TransNation's profits, but took away enough to show TransNation that its repeated breaches of its contract would not be tolerated. I hope you will reverse the decision in favor of Mid-America against TransNation and affirm the decision in favor of Land America and against Mid-America. Thank you.
Our thanks both to Mr. Freeling and to Mr. Bond for their help today in the case.